So from Dayan's desk number 76, Mihu Yehudi, determining Jewish status. So an inspiration or perhaps linchpin for tonight's shiur was this story that came out about a Masada Kiddushin who married a couple, and then it was discovered afterwards that the husband wasn't really Jewish. If you look at the very last source, we'll start from the very end. Good place to begin, right? Source 36 from the Yeshiva World, the story from November 9th. But they didn't call for stricter background checks. So the truth is that anyone who's been working in the Beis Din world, like myself, knows that this is not an isolated story. Unfortunately, this does happen from time to time, that sometimes there's a surprise that the Masada Kiddushin may not have done his homework fully, or maybe one of the parties fooled the Masada Kiddushin, and a marriage is performed based on the assumption that both the chassan and the kala are Jewish, but turns out somebody here wasn't Jewish. So here the story says the directors at three Bat Yidin in the U.S. sent a letter on Monday to Chabad Shulchan across the country. This was, from what I could tell, a Chabad case regarding the alarming story of a Lebanese man who masqueraded as a firm Jew and married a Jewish woman. But then in the end it turned out that he was not Jewish altogether, and the rabbi who performed the wedding unwittingly actually ended up performing an intermarriage. So according to the story, it was a conference call to discuss the situation, formulate guidelines to prevent such a situation from occurring again in the future. So the truth is that we do have guidelines. We have very extensive guidelines for determining the standards that relate to issuing a Tudat Yahadut, a certificate that a party is Jewish and that they're also eligible to marry, that they don't have a psul of mamzeris or any other reason why they couldn't enter into the contemplated marriage in front of them. And we have a Tudat Ravakut to be Yahadut, in which we determine that the person is single, that they're not still attached to some previous marriage, and that we may have made a determination that they're really Jewish. So when do parties come to the Beis Din for this type of a certificate? Well, if they're getting married in Eretz Yisrael, where there is a supervisory authority by the Rabbanut, based on the power vested in them by the government to have oversight over all Jewish weddings, so parties simply would not be able to get married at all under official governmental auspices unless they go through the Rabbanut, and they have to provide evidence and paperwork demonstrating that they really are Jewish before they can get married. Here in America, it's more of an Ishkal Yashav Einav Yaseh type of landscape. As everyone knows, we don't have an official state-appointed Beis Din. We have separation between religion and state. So parties will generally just come to the Beis Din to make this type of a determination if they're about to get married in Israel, for example. And the Rabbanut asks them for such a letter. So we have parties that come to us all the time. And then we do have protocols. Of course we have protocols for making this type of investigation. But in addition to that, there are also Rabbanim who are about to be Masada Kiddushin, and they may not recognize the background of one or both of the parties, and they feel that the investigation might be a little bit out of their league, and they will come to the Beis Din and ask the Beis Din to make the determination as to whether the parties are eligible to marry, and we go through our full-fledged analysis before, you know, we issue the certificate. But again, it really varies from rabbi to rabbi. There are different protocols. It might be easier if you're the rabbi of a community and somebody comes from a well-established family within your community where it has already been long accepted that this family is a kosher family in the Jewish nation, and where there's a strong chazaka along those lines, where the rabbi may not have to do so much homework. They know the person's never been married before. They've been watching the person grow up their entire life. They know the family is connected to 20 other well-respected Jewish families throughout the world. If this family wasn't a kosher family, then, you know, what family would be? So they are comfortable performing the marriage without further investigation. But there might be another person who this congregant is marrying from outside of the community, and maybe they'll pick up a phone and call the rabbi of the other person's community just to make sure that there are no problems with the family that person came from. And the amount of homework that's done probably varies from rabbi to rabbi, from case to case. And if it gets more complicated when you're dealing with Baalei Tshuva, when you're dealing with people who are coming from outside of the Orthodox community, people who are coming from communities that are completely unfamiliar, and The truth of the matter is that the Gemara really speaks about this at great length, and the Poskim speak about this at great length. To what degree do we believe somebody who walks through the door and says, "Hi, I'm Jewish and I'm eligible to marry"? Can we just say, "Okay, great"? We don't know otherwise, so do we just accept the person at their word when they say that? Or is that there are requirements to undergo more investigation? So if we would investigate somebody, there are four different types of concerns that could arise over the course of an inquiry. One type of concern is that maybe there was an intermarriage along the way, and the person in front of us is not really Jewish, that they come from a mother or a maternal grandmother who wasn't really Jewish. There might be a concern as well that there was a conversion, and maybe the conversion that was performed on the mother or the maternal grandmother was not a kosher conversion, in which case this person wouldn't be, you know, Jewish on that basis. There is, which was the subject of the shir that we gave two times ago, there's the concern that maybe somebody got divorced along the way. There was a mother or grandmother who got divorced from a previous husband and did not receive a get before having this child, or having this child's parent, with a different husband, in which case there would be the possibility of mamzeris. So that's obviously something that we look at as well. And there's also the possibility of adoption, that maybe there's a complete Jewish line in the sense that the parents that raised this person were Jewish, but they weren't the birth parents. The birth parents were somebody else because this child was adopted. Or maybe this child's mother was adopted. And we have cases like that that come in front of the Beis Din all the time as well. And then there are standards that need to be followed in terms of how does one investigate to ensure that the birth mother, when there was an adoption, was really Jewish, was kosher, was legitimate and Jewish, and therefore this is also a person who is a legitimate Jewish individual who is eligible to marry. So there really are several layers with respect to this discussion. We're not going to cover all of the layers in one shiur, but I would like to give sort of an introduction to the landscape behind how these issues are addressed. So the threshold issue is, to what degree do we start off with the presumption of Jewishness and the presumption of legitimacy when people come in front of us in order to treat them as Jewish, and specifically to feel comfortable performing a wedding that we feel, yes, this is definitely a case where the chazaka is strong enough that we can perform the wedding? Do we just assume everything is hunky-dory unless proven otherwise? To what degree is there a requirement to check, to have the standards changed over the centuries, over the millennia, so that there's more of a concern, for example, maybe nowadays, than there may have been during the time of the Gemara? Secondly, if we ask these questions and we undertake this investigation and we make these inquiries and we find out that somebody, for example, was adopted or the mother was adopted, so what type of records then do you trust in order to come to the conclusion that the person is really Jewish without having to do a gil l'chumah, without having to make them go through some sort of a conversion process? Thirdly, is there a concern with respect to people from certain types of communities where there is more of a question mark than if they come from established Jewish communities? So, for example, if a person is an Ethiopian or a person comes from the B'nai Israel of India, so to what degree can we rely upon representations of certain authorities over the years that these communities really had a Jewish status, that they came from Jewish people and that therefore everybody is Jewish? Or to what degree do we have to worry about entire communities that maybe we can't rely upon their Jewishness? And what about communities like Russia, for example? And this is where many of the discussions in the Poskim emerge from the question of the Ole Russia, of the Jews who immigrated from the Soviet Union, the former Soviet Union, to Eretz Yisrael, and now they want to get married, and it was known that there was a very high intermarriage rate, which is generally calculated by the Poskim as something in the range of 30%, where there was an intermarriage rate, where you start off with a major unknown since in many of these communities you didn't have a very strong practices of Judaism and established synagogues for many decades, and there's a lot of confusion about what records to rely upon, what you can't rely upon, how you make a definitive determination regarding somebody's Jewishness. Do you treat those communities differently? And if so, what are the general standards that should be followed? So if you look at your source sheets, I have a lot of sources that I don't know if we'll cover all of them, but I wanted to run through sort of the basic opinions, because like in many areas of halacha, there are different opinions about how we approach these issues as a general matter. And then we can talk about how it ends up being applied specifically nowadays in the practical world in terms of how these calculations are made, how these determinations are made. So if you look at the first source, people are familiar with the investigation of eight mothers. Hanosa Isha Kehenes, somebody wants to marry a woman from the family of Kohanim, and you have to worry that maybe there was chalolos, maybe, let's say, her father married a woman who was prohibited to marry a Kohen, in which case she'd be a chalolo, in which case the Kohen wouldn't be allowed to marry her. So that's one level of concern. That level of concern it ends up being a springboard towards other concerns. Once we're going to be worried about that, maybe we'll also be worried about Mamzeris and how much you have to investigate previous generations. So the Mishnah talks about investigating for four generations that end up being eight different sides of the family. So you check the mother and the mother of the mother and the mother of the father of the mother and her mother and then the mother from the father's side. It ends up being eight different mothers who have to be checked in terms of their lineage to make sure that there was no halalus in the family. And it sounds like there has to be a very rigorous checking process. But again, here we're talking about where specifically we're worried about halalos in a Kohen family. To what degree do we extend this to other types of situations where it's not necessarily a Kohen getting married? And does this apply to every type of situation? So the Gemara puts a limitation on this immediately. Puts the kibosh on, you know, any kind of concern that we're going to really have to investigate people's great-great-grandparents to ad infinitum every single time that you want to perform a marriage. And as we know, it can be difficult. Many people, they can't even count beyond their grandparents. They don't even know how to track down or trace any records of their great-grandparents. So the Gemara says that Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rav Zudivri Rabbi Meir. This Mishnah is going to be Meir. Chachamim say that we have a general principle. It's a very important principle. This is, you know, axiom number one. Kol mishpachos b'cheskas ksheiros hein omdos. That when it comes to Jewish families, we work with the assumption that a Jewish family is presumed to be kosher unless proven otherwise. We don't work with the assumption that there's a problem. If you know there's a Goldberg, there's a Goldstein, there's a Schwartz, there's a Cohn, there's a family, a well-known family, they've been in the community, people know who they are, they know who their cousins are, their uncles are, their aunts are, their nephews and nieces and so forth, and it's an established family, so we assume it's a kosher family, one of the daughters gets engaged to be married, we assume it's okay, we can perform the wedding, one of the sons gets engaged, we assume it's okay, we can perform the wedding. However, the Gemara has one qualification for this. If you go down a little bit, that there's one addition. Amar Rav Yehuda, Marav, and Ika Damri. Zudim Rabbi Meir, Chachamim Amin, Kol Mishpachos B'Cheskas K'sheiros Hein Omdos. Chachamim say that, generally speaking, we assume the families ought to be kosher. But Amar Rav Chama B'Goriya Marav, however, even within the sheets of the Chachamim, there is one type of case where we have to conduct an investigation. And what is that? In Kori Alav Irat Tzorek Livdok Acharel. If there is, if somebody casts aspersions to say, you know what, there really is a problem with this family. This is a family where maybe there was some halalos that crept in. Maybe there was an intermarriage somewhere that crept in. Maybe there's a real problem over here. It's going to require a bedikah, so then we're going to have to conduct an investigation. What would be an error? What would be some type of an aspersion, some sort of a question mark, some sort of a problem that creeps in that would require a further investigation? So Rashi over there says that this type of a question mark of casting aspersions on the kashrus of a family can only come about if you have shnei edim. Ein tzarech b'dika elin karo leh shnei edim. You need two witnesses to testify, oh, there's a cholol in this family. There's a mom's in this family. There's something in this family that has to be investigated before you can go and marry this family. Rashi goes so far as to say, It doesn't even have to be that they're testifying that there's something that's definitively wrong in this family. It could be shemesh apostel. It could be some sort of a smidgen, some sort of a rumor that there's something wrong that has to be investigated further. But it's a rumor that is established by two valid witnesses who testify in front of Beis Din that there is some type of a shmur, there is some type of a there is some type of a word out there on the street that there's something wrong with this family, and then that would require further investigation. If you look at the way this is codified in the Shulchan Aruch and Eben Ezra Siman Beis is where you'll find the codification of many of these laws. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't add the Shemet Shel Pasul a possibility. Shulchan Aruch says that in order for a family that had a chazakah that was established as a kosher family to be under a cloud of suspicion, where a Beis Din would have to conduct a further inquiry and maybe even check several generations in order to make sure that there's no problem, it has to be a concrete allegation that there was a cholo that married into this family. There was a mamzer that married into this family. But if it's a shemetz, if it's just some type of a vague rumor, then that would not be sufficient. However, the Beis Shmuel in Siman Beis does quote this Rashi and says, no, according to this Rashi, even if it's not a concrete allegation, but something which is more vague and amorphous, that also would have to be investigated. But again, it requires the testimony of two witnesses. So from here, we now are on safer ground. If we just emerged from this Gemara in Kiddushim, from this discussion, we would say, you know what? It's necessary to conduct a very thorough investigation. That's when there's an error. That's when there's a reisa. That's when people are speaking in the street about something being wrong with this family, when there are two witnesses that came in front of the Beis Din and pointed out that there's a problem with the family. But otherwise, we assume all families are wonderful within the Jewish community, and anybody who comes from any family can be married off without further investigation. But then you look at the Gemara in Ksuvos. Gemara in Ksuvos and Daf Kof Dalet Aleph happens to be talking about Kohanim, but according to Rashi's interpretation of the Gemara, it extends sort of beyond that. Well, we have, in addition to the question of what are the criteria for establishing somebody as a legitimate Jew, we have the question of what establishes somebody as a Kohen and Kenduchen, and then there's an additional level, which is a much more serious and a much more rigorous level of what constitutes the sufficient criteria to establish somebody as a Kohen who's allowed to do avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. That's even, you know, much more stringent standard. But here we just, so that's something that, God willing, we'll get to as well as we, you know, continue this discussion in future sessions, Simi Yotz Hashem. But here, the Gemara says two things. In terms of establishing somebody as a Kohen for purposes of, let's say, eating truma, so it says that if you have two Kohanim, two people who come together and they testify about each other, I'm a Kohen, he's a Kohen, that's good enough. But it's not going to be good enough unless you have two independent witnesses for purposes of marrying a woman. For purposes of marrying a woman. What do you mean marrying a woman? A Kohen, so there isn't sort of a special credentials when it comes to, oh, I'm a Kohen, so I get to marry more women. If you're a Kohen, you get to marry less women. You can't marry a Grush, you can't marry a Giyaris. So what's this Lahasio Isha? Lahasio Isha doesn't sound like it's specifically a category that's unique for Kohanim, that, oh, yes, you know, Nemanis, that we're actually going to let this, you know, person marry a woman. So it's, according to Rashi, this has to do with marrying a woman who is checked out, a woman in terms of her own lineage, in terms of her own legitimacy. She's a woman, Miyucheset, that we know is established as a legitimate Jewish woman. So we're not going to allow just anybody off the street to marry her, and to assume that this person is an eligible Jewish bachelor to marry a Jewish woman, because this is Malahi B'yuchsin. It's a Malahi B'yuchsin that we require edus, we require actual testimony. We don't know about this person's credentials, and therefore we require testimony that this person is eligible to marry. So Tosfos asks a question on this Rashi. What in the world is going on over here? What would be wrong with the person? Now, remember, there are two possible things that could be wrong. One thing that could be wrong is, and that really is what the Gemara in Kiddushin was focusing upon, that the family is Jewish, But maybe there's some sort of illegitimacy in terms of getting married. There's some chalolos. The woman is a chalol and therefore she can't marry a kohen. The woman is a mamzeres and therefore she can't marry a kohen, or for that matter a non-kohen, because she's a mamzeres. But so that is sort of one level of a concern that we have when performing a wedding. What is the other level of concern that we have that obviously is hovering over this entire discussion? Maybe the person's not Jewish altogether. But for the time being, Tosfos assumes that the focus and concern that we have at this point in time is maybe there's something wrong with a person's lineage in terms of being a mamzer and a sin that they can't marry freely within the Jewish community. So Tosfos says, but wait a second. We don't worry about such things. Besides the Gemara and Kedushin that we mentioned, where we said that the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Meir and say there are other Gemaras, lots of other Gemaras. So there are various Gemaras that Tosfos quotes in different places to make this point. One Gemara is a person who is the child of a Jewish woman and a non-Jewish man. What's the status of a person who is born of a non-Jewish man and a Jewish woman? They're Jewish. They're Jewish. And they're allowed to get married. But you know what? Some people might view them with a certain amount of stigma. So there were various rabbis that Gemara and Yerama said that would say to such people, go and exile yourself to a place where nobody will recognize you, and they'll marry you, because they won't recognize you, so they'll marry you. So it sounds like when they walk into town and they say, I'm Jewish, and I'm legitimate, we just trust them, and we will allow people to marry them. And we don't worry that, oh, maybe they come from a family of Mamzerim, maybe they come from a family of Nesinim, maybe they come from a family of, you know, illegitimate people. We don't worry about that. So Rabbeinu Tam says that what we're talking about here is basically a type of lahasio isha that's talking about marrying within a very exalted and a very miyuchastic kohen family. And that's all. For that you require a special edus, a special testimony, but otherwise anybody is allowed to get married. Rabbeinu Tam, that's line number 4, I try conveniently for you, to bold face, you know, sort of like the main parts of the sources, so I hope that you find that helpful. The Nira Rabbeinu Tam, the Lasio Isha the Ka'amar, Haina Lasio Biduka Bidali Mos. We're talking about a woman who's been checked out with these 4 different generations going up on her mother's side and going up on her father's side and so forth. Why would that be necessary? Not to just get married to a Jewish woman, but rather Lakshir Bito Lakoin. So that not for the purpose of this individual, we assume this individual, okay, let's say he marries such a woman, he's allowed to get married to anybody, but in terms of his daughter, if his daughter wanted to marry a Kohen, so then in order for her to be allowed to marry a Kohen without further bidika, so then, as based on the Mishnah and Kiddushin, we require this investigation for all of these different generations. We have a higher standard that if he married, you know, a woman from that family, we're not going to allow his own daughter to marry a Kohen unless he's checked out, which is why we need the Edim, we need the witnesses to testify about him. And similarly, says Tosfos, and this is a very important similarly, because when we get to the end of Tosfos, this is the only part of the equation that's going to stand up as sort of the maskan of how we hold. Really, the Gemara could have said, why is it that I require 2 witnesses to testify about this person's status as a Kohen, so that we would allow him to do a voda, because we don't allow a person to just walk in and say he's a Kohen for purposes of letting him do a voda in the Beis HaMikdash, or for that matter, even for Dochening. Even for Dochening, there's a higher standard to establish somebody as a Kohen, that we need much more of a chazaka. We don't just believe anybody to walk into the shul and say, oh, I'm a Kohen, you know, give me the first aliyah. Huh? Not so fast. Get in line. You don't automatically get the first aliyah. You have to establish yourself. There has to be some sort of a chazaka, some sort of an edus to establish you as a Kohen, certainly for purposes of getting an aliyah. But then it says Tosfos, but wait a second. That wasn't the maskan of the Sugi and Kiddushin. The maskan of the Sugi and Kiddushin was that who was it who required a bedika, you know, even for, you know, marrying a woman from a Kohen family? That was only Rabbi Meir. But the Chachamim said that we only worry when there's going to be an iror in terms of getting married, that you have to, you know, check out that the person has so much yichus in order to marry a woman from a Kohen family and not worry that she comes from Chalolim and so forth. So it's a kulak shmaitin, the mitzvah bedika lasi bito the Kohen, asir Rabbi Meir. It's going like Rabbi Meir, because the Chachamim disagree with the mitzvah bedika. The ami kol mishpachos becheskes ksheiros ein mamdos. They hold that all the mishpachos are considered to be ksheiros. They ain't talking about the way that could they lack should be to the guna. You don't even need 1 witness in order to allow this person's daughter to marry a kohen. Umiu So what is the only left, what is the only vestige of a case where we still would require some sort of an edus to establish the person as to establish the person's status? Only for the second answer that Tosfos gave. In order to establish the person not as eligible to get married, not as a legitimate Jew, but as a legitimate Kohen, that we would allow him to do avoda. Okay, so that's the one case. That's the only type of determination that would require edus. Only for that would we require edim. So Tosfos says we don't worry about establishing somebody as a Jewish, as legitimate, for purposes of being allowed to marry anybody. Anyone is believed, even if they come from the outside entirely. But again, up until now, the focus has been worrying about whether somebody who's presumed to be Jewish might have a taint of scandal in their family background, that maybe there's chalolos and maybe there's mamzerus. Where do we see this discussion somehow extending to the question of being Jewish altogether? So that's source 7, Zion. Okay, we're getting very far. Tana Rabbanan, somebody comes along and he says, Ger Ani. What does Ger Ani imply? It implies we did not know this person to be Jewish, hence they're explaining to us, hey, I know I don't look Jewish, I know that I don't come from, you know, any family that anybody knows about, but I'm a convert. So I'm a convert and you have to accept me as Jewish because I'm a convert. Do I have to believe somebody when they walk in and they say that they're a legitimate convert? Says the Gemara, no. Tamalawi, it's covered muksak lecha. We only have to accept somebody as a legitimate convert, a legitimate member of the Jewish family, of the Jewish community, when they came originally from outside the Jewish community, if they're muksak, if it's already been established that they are a ger, that they're now a legitimate Jew. Because the pasuk says, v'chi yagur itcha ger be'artzechem. So it says, itcha, that a ger lives with you. It means you and your community need to have made an affirmative determination that this person is a genuinely a ger, that they're genuinely a convert. And there's a machlokis about when does the person have to bring a proof with them. Is it only when it's a convert in Eretz Yisrael, but not when they're outside of Eretz Yisrael? Why would that be? Because there'd be more of a reason for a person to want to pretend to be a ger in Eretz Yisrael because of all the benefits of being a Jew in Eretz Yisrael, that you get, you know, many more privileges. And the Chachamim say it doesn't really matter. Israel, outside of Israel, the person started out not as Jewish. They have to prove that they are now Jewish. So Tosfos in Yevamos, it says the following very interesting thing. This is Rabbeinu Tam again. Rabbeinu Tam sort of continuing in the same theme. Said, I spoke beforehand about how there's a general presumption that I don't worry about allowing a person to marry once I know that they're Jewish. I'm not worried that they're a chol. I'm not worried that there's a mom. There are moms there. Yeah, they need edus if they want to establish that they're a kohen and do a voda, but that's about it. Now Rabbeinu Tam says the same applies with respect to the question mark as to whether somebody is Jewish. Amar Rabbeinu Tam. The davka be the adinam to have only kachorim meikara. Rabbeinu Tam says this is only when we knew that the person was originally a non-Jew. Dilo abe yadinan mehemun migo di baye ma'israni de mehemun. However, if we did not know originally that the person was not Jewish, so if a person would walk in and I didn't know that they were not Jewish and they come in and say, guess what, I'm Jewish. What, do we believe them? According to Rabbeinu Tam, you believe everybody, unless that there is some sort of erasa, you believe them. And he has a proof from a different Gemara. What's the Gemara in this case? It's a famous Gemara at the beginning of Psachim. The Gemara at the beginning of Psachim, Dav Gimel Mabes, talks about there was an Aramean. There was an Aramean who would go up to Jerusalem, he would go up to the Holy Temple during Pesach, and he would eat from the Korban Pesach. He would sit around and eat from the Korban Pesach, say, I'm Jewish, I'm joining in your Korban Pesach, I'm going to eat from the Korban Pesach. And then he told Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, who wasn't there at the time, for whatever reason, he wasn't able to be Ola Larego, he told Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira about what he did. He said, I really fooled your brothers there, and your cousins in Israel, because they fed me from the Korban Pesach. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira said, oh, did they give you the fatty tail? No, he didn't give me the fatty tail, because the fatty tail of a lamb, assuming that, you know, they would generally offer a lamb, or he told them that it was a lamb, gets offered on the Mizbeach. So he went back and he said to the people next time around, I want the lamb. And then they realized, and they said, who told you that? Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira said, I should ask them. They realized, oh, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira is sending us a code. We better check this guy out. Checked him out, killed him, took care of it. Okay. So the question is, how did they allow the person to eat from the Korban Pesach in the first place? So Tosfos says, because he walked in, he said it was Jewish, and obviously, even though he didn't necessarily look Jewish, but, you know, you believe a person when they say that they're Jewish, if you didn't know that they weren't Jewish to begin with. So it's only if you knew that a person wasn't Jewish to begin with that they have to prove their Jewishness, but otherwise we assume that the person is Jewish. Why? Based on what principle? Tosfos says, I'll tell you based on what principle. Rove. Achri Rabbi Matos. We always follow majority. But wait, the majority of people in the world are not Jewish. He says that not, we don't always have a rove. So he says the Abachor Malkum Nami Ikarova Ruba. He says there's always a rove. It's always a majority that people are Jewish. It's always a majority. Well, you know, where Jews live, it's a majority, right? West Rogers Park, you know, generally a majority. He says, no, even if it's a small town community, you're out in the boondocks somewhere, and it's not a majority of Jews where you are, a person walks in, they say that they're Jewish, you didn't know that the person wasn't Jewish beforehand, that the person you have, then the person has the right to be presumed to be Jewish. Why is that? Fascinating principle. Axiom number two. Axiom number two. What's that? To rova b'ayim lefenenu b'toras yadus, Yisrael hate. Because the vast majority of people who will assert that they are Jewish, who in their right mind is going to assert they're Jewish? Say, ha, I'm Jewish. I want the world that I'm Jewish. You know, pow, people start shooting them and rounding them up and sending them to concentration camps. Who wants to assert that they're Jewish? If a person's going to go through the trouble of asserting that they're Jewish, so they're, you know, either nuts or, you know, they're probably Jewish. So we assume that the people are genuinely Jewish. This is a fascinating statement. Tosis is making the statement that people can self-identify as Jewish and that we will assume that they are telling the truth that they're really Jewish. So it emerges from the various discussions in the Gemara over here where Tosfos, you know, says that when we require that the person has to establish their Jewishness, it means that they were originally known to be a non-Jew. We end up, if you look at the Rambam in Hilkos Yisuri Bia, Perek Yud Gimel, you put together all of the statements of the Rambam and the statements of the Magid Mishnah, we'll get to in a second, there ends up being three different degrees that are essentially accepted by most of the poskim, the halacha, three different levels, three different gradations. Gradation number one is, person walks in and he says, I'm Jewish. I've always been Jewish. So he's believed. End of story. The person gets engaged to a woman in the community. We perform the wedding. Mazel tov, wonderful. And no further questions need to be asked. An amazing thing. So it doesn't look like the standards are so rigorous after all. At least in terms of the baseline standard. We'll, you know, see if things have changed maybe a little bit over the years. And then there's a second case that the Rambam seems to talk about, which is that a person says, Niskayati. A person says, you know, I converted. I didn't know that the person was not Jewish to begin with. The person himself gives me that information. Look at source Yudal. Rabbi Hilkos is be a parak. You give my local yud. Misha bav el mashahaya akum. Nisgayer bezden neman. The person tells us that they were non-Jewish. I wouldn't have known that the person was not Jewish. The person tells us that they weren't Jewish. So they're neman. They're believed. Why are they believed? She pesha also a pesha hitir. If the person would have said just that they were Jewish, so I would have believed them. The only reason I have reason to cast aspersions on them is because they admitted that they weren't Jewish, but the same person who admitted that he wasn't Jewish is telling me in the same breath, but guess what? I converted in front of a legitimate Beis Din. So therefore, Pesha also a Pesha Yeter. So there I can presume that this person is Jewish as well because he has a Migo. Migo, he could have told me he's Jewish and I would have believed him. So therefore, if he says, oh, guess what? I wasn't always Jewish, but now I'm Jewish, so I believe him as well. Right? Just like a woman comes. I didn't know that she was a married woman. She still tells me, I was a married woman, but now I'm divorced, so I'm allowed to believe her that she's eligible to marry. Right? Unless I knew that she was divorced, in which case she has to bring, I knew that she was married, in which case she has to bring proof that she's now divorced. And then the Rambam says, but this is only an Eretz Yisrael. It was an Eretz Yisrael, and not even nowadays. There was a certain time in Eretz Yisrael that everybody was Jewish in Eretz Yisrael. Nowadays, it's not true anymore. But he says in Chutz La'aretz, as well as Eretz Yisrael nowadays, so basically, effectively, nowadays, Sarach Lahavi Raya, person has to bring a proof anyway. Bechakak Yisrael Yisraelis, in order to marry a Jewish woman. But the Omer says the Rambam, but that's not the din. The din is that I should believe the person who says that I converted, but that I was not Jewish, but then I converted legitimately. So the Rambam says, Zumayla B'yuchsin. Zumayla! We have special stringencies when it comes to performing marriages. One stringency is that if the person tells me, it's true that they could have not told me, in which case everything would be hunky-dory. But if the person told me that they started out not Jewish, and then they converted, so, you know, for all other purposes, give them an aliyah to the Torah, fine, I'll give them an aliyah to the Torah. But for purposes of marrying them off to a woman who's known to be Jewish in the community, so then the person's going to have to bring proof that they really did convert legitimately in front of a legitimate Beis Din. And then I have category number three. Category number three, of course, is the case where the person was known to be not Jewish, as just the case straight out of the Gemara. The person was known to be not Jewish. The person was known to be not Jewish, and that's the case of the Rambam. Go back to source test. Rambam Hilchos Yisuri Bia Perak Yud Gimel Halacha Zayin. Bavi Amin Iskayarti Bebeis Dino Shaploni Vipiluni Eino Neman. The person is simply not believed when the person says, oh, I converted in a particular Beis Din, and now I'm perfectly Jewish. The person is not believed at all. Why in this case is the person not believed at all? Look at the Magen Mishnah in source Yud Gimel and the Haggah. The person who wrote to the footnotes in the Magen Mishnah said that there actually was another girsa in this particular halakha of the Rambam that says explicitly, not Bavi Omer, but Nachri Shebavi Omer. A person I knew was a non-Jew comes and tells me I converted, so he's Eino Neman, because I knew the person was originally not Jewish. And in fact, the Magen Mishnah, even without that girsa, says that's what the Rambam is talking about. We knew that the person was originally not Jewish. We don't have the Migo anymore. He couldn't have just come in and say, oh, guess what, I was always Jewish, because I know it's not true. I know the person was not Jewish. They were walking around the neighborhood, you know, as somebody that was known as the Shabbos Goy for many, many years. But if a person wasn't known as originally not Jewish, since the person could say, I'm a Jew, and he would be believed, he's also believed to say that I was once not Jewish, and I converted. It's a question, machlokes aposkim, whether he has to name the Beis Din. Pashtus is that that he doesn't have to name the Beis Din. You look at the Rambam. The Rambam just says v'nisgaya be'Beis Din. The person said mishabava amashayakum v'nisgaya be'Beis Din neman. So Beis Din Ploni. Some of the later poskim say it has to be like a milsa davidu legluye. He names the Beis Din. You could check it out, but others say no because the Rambam doesn't say Beis Din Ploni. So he says that is the opinion of the majority of the Meforshim. Why is it the opinion of the majority of the Meforshim? Because we'll see that there is one approach that says otherwise. And these are two different approaches that actually are in a later Magen Mishnah, which is in Hilchos Yisuri Bia, Parakof Halacha Hey, that source of Yudalit. It's a very important Magen Mishnah, just so you know sort of the basic sources, the major mekos of the whole discussion of how much credibility you give somebody just on the pure basis of their walking in and saying, guess what, I'm Jewish. So this Magen Mishnah gives you sort of the two major approaches. So one approach, which is consistent with the second approach of the Magen Mishnah in Perakop Halakha of Yisuri Bia, is the one that I just gave you, which is the approach of these three gradations. According to these three gradations, basically, if a person walks in and says they're Jewish, no further questions asked. As long as there's no reis, I never knew the person to be not Jewish, then I can treat them as Jewish and they can marry a Jewish woman. I have a chumrah in the case where the person, you know, walks in and says, oh, guess what? I wasn't always Jewish, but now I'm Jewish, so I really believe them, but as the chumrah, I require them to show evidence before I'll marry them off. And then I have the case where they really mean Ikar Adin, have to show evidence that they're Jewish, and that's when I knew the person wasn't Jewish and they claim that they converted. No. I need evidence. I need proof that you really converted properly. So the Magen Mishnah points out that there's another Rambam that you have to throw into the mix of these various halakos that the Rambam just mentioned, and that's the Rambam in Hilchos Yisuri Bia Perakop Halakha Hey, which happens coincidentally to also be the Rambam on which this Magen Mishnah is writing about. And that is the Rambam that kind of takes off on the sugya a little bit that we were discussing in Ksuvos about how much do we trust the Kohanim. And the Rambam there says, Kohen Miyuchas. In this case, I've already established the person is a Kohen. He's a Kohen Miyuchas. Great, wonderful. And now he wants to say, guess what? This is my sonny boy, and he's also a Kohen. Like, okay, that's generally we trust parents to identify their children. Doesn't seem like the biggest skittish in the world, but look at what the Rambam says. He says, Ein malin oso liyuksen apiv. Not so fast. We're not going to assume that this is really his son. For purposes of Yuchsin, Yuchsin sounds like what Rashi was discussing in the Gemara and Suvas. Even from marrying him off to a nice Jewish girl, and coincidentally, the Rambam happens to be talking about a Kohen, but I guess he could have been talking about anybody, right? And we're just talking about the type of nemunus you have in the realm of Gehunas. So he says, oh, when it comes to marrying somebody off, you better bring proof that this is really your son. So it sounds like that even if a person is a Yisrael, they're not believed for Yuxin purposes. So what's going on over here? So the Magid Mishnah says, Kfar Shalom Meforshim. This is the second line, the bold line in the Magid Mishnah that you see in Source Yidal. And the Meforshim ask the question. They say, Lama Tzarek Shem Edus Lasiyu Isha. Why do I need testimony for this Kohen to marry off his son? We don't worry that the son is in a sin or mamzer. The chol mishpachos v'chesed k'shemus einomdos. We already said axiom number one. All of the mishpachos are presumed to be k'sheros, as we've already spelled out. So therefore, there's something here that doesn't really fit so well. So he says, v'nira li shekush yizu ichrikal rabbein alomar mashikasta perek yud gimel. He says that this is what led the Rambam to say what he said earlier. That if a person shows up and he says, I was not always Jewish, I didn't know that about the person, but they said, I wasn't always Jewish. So he said, we have a chumrah, malas, the b'yuchsin, that we're not going to marry him off, elam ken yabi raya. Even though we didn't know that the person was previously Jewish. And now the Magid Mishnah goes further, and this is an unbelievable chiddush to the Magid Mishnah, and it's not accepted by the majority of poskim. What does he say here? Look at this, is six words before the end of the line. The ifshel advarv, you see that? The ifshel advarv, everybody? Okay. The ifshel advarv, do a din, and it could very well be that the same thing is true. The mishaba be'amashu yisar meikaro. A person comes and he says, I am Jewish. A person comes and he says, I am Jewish. That may be the same chumrah that we would apply to the person who told us, without our knowing it, that he was previously not Jewish, but they converted, and he has to prove his Jewishness in order to get married. So to anybody, I don't know. I don't know the person. And the person shows up and he says, I'm Jewish, so I have to make sure that his connections really check out, that his father is really who he says his father is, that his mother is really who he says his mother is. I have to check it out. Because of the mal of yuxin. Because otherwise, why am I being more machmir in the case of the person who tells me that he was originally not Jewish? Why wouldn't I just then rely on the Migo? The Migo that he could have told me that he was always Jewish and that I wouldn't require any further evidence to get him married. So why am I imposing this chumrah on the person who just had the bad fortune of being overly honest with me and telling me that he wasn't always Jewish and he converted? If I'm going to be machmir in that case, I should be machmir in this case. That's what we call the first approach in the Magid Mishnah. The first approach in the Magid Mishnah, a very chumridic approach, because it ends up with the result that every single person who shows up has to prove their Jewishness, according to the first approach of the Magid Mishnah. And then Magid Mishnah says, Aval, but there is the other approach. There is the other approach. I admit there's the other approach. Yesh min ha-meforshim. There are amongst the meforshim, shekasvu, and we know who are these meforshim, Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam, you know, Rabbeinu Tam is the big makel over here. Who appears to be the big machmir? It sounds a little bit like Rashi and Suvos, right? Rashi and Suvos sounds a little bit like the machmir. He says, but Yeshman and Meforshim, there are those who are makel. Shekasid lasil isha labdavka. It doesn't mean that every single person needs to bring a proof that they're Jewish in order to get married. It means that if a person wants to be in the upper echelon ranks of the Kohanim Yuchasim, so that person has to prove his mettle, has to prove his credentials, and has to, you know, bring all kinds of rayos, otherwise, we're not going we're not going to trust his family as being amongst the family of Miuchasim, where if this Kohen has a daughter, that we'll assume that this daughter has no halalos to her, that she could just, you know, marry a Kohen. So when there's a Kohen who wants to marry into this family of Kohanim, so we require a higher level of scrutiny. And he says, and so too, v'chein ha-mishpachos, v'chein ha-mishpachos ha-bedukos go and shall duka m'shem izbeach v'shel Sanhedrin and nidbachos bo. Nobody's going to marry this man who's claiming to be of such an exalted status and yichus of Kohanim for purposes of his doing avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, unless he's able to prove his credentials. But if it's for anything other than proving that you're a Kohen Miyuchas, or that the Kohanim Miyuchasim are going to be eligible, are going to feel comfortable marrying your daughter, so then we would assume that it would be perfectly fine to trust that somebody is Jewish for purposes of allowing them to get married. And he says that maybe that's why the Rambam over here in Halacha, in Perek Chaf, Halacha Hey, said that Ein Malin Oso LeYuchsin, but he didn't use the Lashon of saying that Ein LaHasio, that we're not going to allow him to get married. Right, in order to in other Rambams, in some of the other halakas, we said ein masiyin osam or achakak yisa yisraelis. What lashon did the Rambam use over here? If you look in source number Yud Beis, Rambam said ein malin osa liyuchsin. Yuchsin doesn't mean marriage per se. It means to give you special status that you're going to be of the higher echelon of Kohanim that get to do avodah in the Beis Hamikdash, and that the Kohanim that do avodah in the Beis Hamikdash are going to marry your daughter. It's a totally different standard altogether. So how do we paskin la halacha? So let's, you know, talk bottom line. We're not going to get through all the sources today, but it's okay. Oth chasel na moed. We'll stick on this topic for a couple of weeks, if that's okay. Marshall, I assume this is like a little bit, you know, more palatable than Gittin, right? Okay, good. So we can stick on this for a little while. Okay, so we have Shulchan Aruch, Yoredei Hilkos Geirim, Simen Reish Samaches Sif Yud. What does it say? So we accept the dichotomy that we mentioned earlier. If you have an Ove Kochavim, Ove Nes Kochavim, Shabav Amr. What case is that talking about? Somebody that I didn't know was not Jewish, or somebody that I know for a fact started out as a non-Jew? What do you think? What do the words mean? Ovi kocham ovedes kocham shibav ve'amin iskayati. They come and say, I converted. What case are we talking about? Somebody we know is not Jewish, because that's how we begin the halacha. Ovi kocham ovedes kocham. We know they started out as not Jewish. So, ain't a neman. We're not going to believe this person, love of a child, to get married, actually, of the Edom, until they're able to approve their argument and demonstrate their status as a Jew, that they bring their conversion papers. Go down to the next bolded line, four lines down, of a Misha Bav Amar. She will only kochav him, and this guy beves them, a Misha Bav. Misha Bav means what? Misha Bav means somebody I didn't know their past. I didn't know where they came from. And now they tell me, oh, guess what? I wasn't always Jewish. Oh, I didn't know that, but don't worry. The good news is that I converted to Judaism. Oh, no problem. Neman. The person is believed 100% based on the lashon that the Rambam used. She'apesha, also a pesha yitir. I wouldn't have known that the person was not Jewish if not for the fact they told me they have some sort of amigo. But the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rambam, because of the Rambam, that the chutz la'aretz sarak la'bi raya, that in chutz la'aretz, and nowadays in Eretz Yisrael as well, the person has to bring a proof in order to get married. Why? Shemala asu b'yuchsin. Because it's a special chumrah, a special stringency that we exercise for purposes of getting married. But do we apply this to a person who comes and shows up, and I don't recognize the person, and the person says, oh, guess what, I'm Jewish? So take a look. This is a very important shach. This is in Sifkat and Tezayin. Now we're getting into the nitty-gritty of applying this nowadays. Look at what the shach says. The shach says, the epsher, the af haramam modin, that even the Rambam would agree, and we care about the Rambam, because very often the halakha, the Shulchan Aruch, is based off of the Rambam. I have visitors that come along. I don't have a, remember, we started out, axiom number one was what? The kol mishpachas v'cheskes k'sheiros heim. And Oreach doesn't come from any mishpacha that I know about. He's a visitor. He's coming from who knows where. Some remote region of Alaska. That they are considered to be Jewish if they claim to be Jewish. Sherubin, even nowadays, Sherubin of the Kocharim, that most people are not Jewish. Aplasil Yisraelis, even to allow the person to marry a Jewish woman without any kind of a mailos of yuxin. Why? Shekor mishpachas becheskas ksheirus heim. Because all of the mishpachas are considered to be becheskas ksheirus. Kemoshin isbar bevenezer simen beis. Vloma rabim mishaloi karnao beori kocharim. The Rambam only imposes his chumrah regarding somebody that I didn't know that they were a non-Jew, and they told me, they spilled the beans. They let out the secret, and they said, I wasn't always Jewish. They are believed based on the Migo, but nonetheless, the Filuaki, we make a mala. Since now we know for a fact that they told us that they didn't start out as Jewish, so we have a special mala, we have a special stringency, a special extra requirement when it comes to allowing a person to get married. Malas to biyuksin she'ei masinos yisraelis b'din migo achi aviraya. They have to bring a raya. Because now the question is this idea: kol mishpachas b'cheslis k'sheiros heim. How much do I need a mishpacha? You look at the lashon of the shach. The shach says what? That I have an oreach. An oreach, right? But he says an oreach becheskes Yisrael. So this oreach becheskes Yisraelim means he's an oreach, but I know he's an oreach that comes from a family because he's like, he brings his papers that I come from the following known Jewish family. What if I have a person, does he mean a person who doesn't have any kind of family connections whatsoever? How much of a family do you need in order to apply that principle of Kol Yisrael becheskes ksheiros hei? So this becomes a major bone of contention of what is the standard of kol mishpachas becheskes ksheiros, and you find this in the Torah. Again, we'll do the Torah. I mean, how can we not do the Torah? So the Torah says if you have he quotes Rashi in Ksuvos, who said the person comes along, that was the Kohen case, right? You have to check the person before they can get married, and he says, you know who else says that? The Ramah. Ramah says the same thing. And he says, Uperish, what's his opinion of the Ramah? The Ramah says that this principle, this axiom of Kol Mishpachas Becheskas Kesheros is a fraud. It doesn't mean what it says. It doesn't mean Kol Mishpachas Becheskas Kesheros. It means Kol HaMishpachos Shehein Becheskas Kesheros Hey Becheskas Kesheros. It means if I have a family that's known to be a kosher family, oh, that's a kosher family. Great. What in the world did you give me then? What does that principle do for me? It's an axiom that ends up just being a complete tautology. It doesn't get me anywhere. It just says, if I've proven that they're kosher, guess what? They're kosher. Okay? Is that what he says? I'm meeting the words. Uperish had yom kol mishpachas becheskas ksheiros, hainu man de yisrei cheskas kashrus. That's what it means. Is if you have a cheskas kashrus, so then you don't have to check any further because you have the cheskas kashrus already. Ain't zark lidok akarov. But if I have a family that hasn't been established as a kosher family, they haven't been checked out, it's a family, it is a family, it's a Jewish family, but it's not a well-known family, it hasn't established credentials over the generations. They haven't been in the show for five generations already. They've only been in Chicago, you know, for one generation. Not Yidua. They came in from the East Coast last year. Who knows? You know, these guys, Lakewood, whatever. Ein mishpachta Yidua, Tzarech, Araya, Miyuxim. So then they have to bring Araya, okay? Ve'ein in Ekanemon, and then one witness isn't believed. You're gonna have two witnesses. You have to really prove your mettle. Belinirim. So look at the Torah himself. The Torah quotes this opinion of the Ramah. And this opinion of the Ramah is going to create a lot of headaches because there were poskim who adopted the halakha, this opinion of the Ramah. The poskim claimed that this opinion of the Ramah was accepted by the Shulchan Aruch. The Torah himself tries to dispel this as best as possible, and he says like this. He says, "Veli nira." This is the next bolded statement. "Veli nira delishna dechol mishpachas becheskas ksheros eino mashma kedvarav." It doesn't sound like it's a tautology. It sounds like it's teaching me something which is a little extra, that don't worry about mishpachos. If you have a Jewish family, you can assume that it's becheskas ksheiros. Eino mashma kidvar, da ayvi b'mayim de islei chazaka. It doesn't sound like it's talking about where there's already a chazaka. Rather, he accepts the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam, whom he quotes afterwards. It says that the only time you need bedika is to establish somebody as being on this exalted kohen status, like the second teretz of the Magen Mishnah, for purposes of saying this person can do avoda, or that his daughter can marry such a kohen who's going to be mishamesh alam izbeach, who's going to do avoda mamish in the base of mikdash. But we don't have that situation right now, at this moment in time. So according to the opinion accepted by the Torah, that of Rabbeinu Tam, as long as the person comes from some sort of a mishpacha, even if it's a mishpacha she'ena yudur, it's going to be perfectly fine. Which leaves us with a possible third category that we'll discuss next time because it's getting late and, you know, I'd love to go on for hours, but, you know, we gotta sleep a little bit. So which is, what about this a third category? We have one category, which is mishpacha, which is already becheskas kashrus, and we're told, oh, if it's already becheskas kashrus, you know what we're going to do for you? We're going to consider you to be becheskas kashrus. That's category number one. That's what the Ramah says, right? Okay. Then we have the Rabbeinu Tam, as explained by the Torah. Even if you're not a well-known family, you're a mishpacha she'ini yidua. It has not been established, you know, in people's minds that you're a kosher family, but you know what? You're Schwartz, you're Cohen, you're Goldberg, you are a Jewish family, you're here, we're going to assume that you're kosher. That's what Rabbeinu Tam says. You know, as long as you don't tell us that you were not that you were once non-Jewish, we're going to assume that you're kosher, not worry about halalos, mamzeros, etc. Okay? What about the case where the person comes to me mechakim, the case that it sounded a little bit like the Shach was talking about, the Oreach, right? And it turns out we don't know anything about this person's family. As far as we know, the person may not have a family altogether. The person's just coming. It's not like it's a mishpacha where it's not yedua, that we don't know the family's credentials. The person just mamish is completely untethered from any kind of a family connection whatsoever. Are we going to be more machmir in that case? And surprisingly, we will find that the Aruch HaShulchan is, and the Beis Hillel are going to draw a distinction between a person with a family connection and a person who comes from far away where we don't know that the person has any kind of family altogether, that maybe there's room to be more machmir in that case. And we'll see that others, such as the Rav Avadya Yosef, will say, what are you talking about? This is no different from, the general principle of Kol Mishpacha. Everybody has a family. And of course, you would, trust this person just the same to say that they're Jewish. Yes, question, and then we'll finish.
Can't he have Migo for the Mishpacha also? Migo, he could have said, he could have associated himself with some well-known family, and since he didn't, just because we don't know his family, doesn't he have a
Migo
for that?
It's a very good question. It's a good argument, and we'll discuss further next time.
Also,
yeah.
All of this discussion, we're not distinguishing between the Raisa level and Drabonin. For example, Yuchoin and Yuchosim, isn't that from Ezra, a Drabonin Chumrah, that he wanted for Avod in the base of Mikdash, a Ksav, Miyuchosim for Kohani, but that's a Drabonin requirement. So we're not discussing on a Daraisa level, this is okay. Rabbanon, we're requiring A, B, and C.
It could be that that's what Rabbeinu Tam is saying. Rabbeinu Tam is saying that this would only be a chumrah d'rabbanan, for Kohanim who are going to be operating on that level.
But on a
deraisa level, the person would have ne'amanus. But then, you have the question.
So this whole thing is d'rabbanan level.
Well, again, according to Rabbeinu Tam, that would be d'rabbanan. But according to the sheets of the Rashi and the Rama, I'm not entirely sure. They'd be saying that, no, I don't have the basic chazaka to begin with. I don't have the basic chazaka to begin with. Okay, we'll stop here. We'll continue next time.